how beautiful life can be. For in desire, I know not where life will lead. If I'm to inspire, lead by example, not by greed. All or not knowing, it's easier than you've been led to believe. Just how beautiful life can be when one allows her to be. Let the children have their chance to see just how beautiful life can be. Just how beautiful life can be. Just how beautiful life can be. Let the children have their chance to see just how beautiful life can be.
You don't have my love. Thank you. Thank you. I've not even said anything yet. It's great to be here in Purfleet. 3 short weeks ago, the people of Thurrock put their trust in Labour. Because just like across Britain, families here in Essex are crying out for change. And our message today is that only Labour can offer that change. Right here, we're announcing the first steps for a changed Labour Party. A party that has returned to its roots, ready to deliver a radical and responsible plan for Britain's future. Last year, we laid out our ambitious missions, and now we are publishing the first steps to deliver where the Tories have failed. Tangible, deliverable policies to begin that long journey to national renewal. And look, we're under no illusions about the scale of the climb ahead. We aren't promising the earth, but we are promising that what we are confident we can deliver on. And for each first step today, you'll hear from Labour's shadow cabinet about what we are promising and how we will pay for it. So you can be in no doubt about your choice and hold us accountable for delivering. And I know that after 14 years of chaos and decline, many of you will feel cynical. But remember that this Tory decline didn't come by chance. It was a choice. A choice to protect those at the very top above all else. But my ask today is to leave that pessimism at home. And remember, this is a country that once built homes for heroes from the rubble of war, that took the opportunity of a new millennium to introduce a minimum wage, that gave birth to industry and democracy, along with the trade union movement and a national health service. And in that same spirit, we are committed to a mission-driven government. But that can only be delivered in lockstep with working people. Just like when Nye Bevan needed nurses and porters to build the NHS and Barbara Castle secured equal pay with women unionising in the workplace, the next Labour government will rebuild Britain in lockstep with you. So to the workers paying more tax while wages crumble, or the families in mouldy temporary accommodation, I say, we have your back. To pensioners waiting in agony for a scan, or kids taught in crumbling classrooms, we have your back. To shop owners struggling on the high street, or businesses paying sky-high energy bills, me, Keir, and the rest of this changed Labour Party have your back. But the Tories abused your trust. But Labour will never take you for granted. And you know, it was a Labour government, a mission driven government that had my back and transformed my life, that gave me the foundation of a secure home and a decent wage when I had my son at 16, and took me from a council estate to Parliament. So trust me when I say, Labour has a plan to get Britain back on its feet. To secure economic stability so we can make work pay with a new deal for working people, so we can build the secure and affordable homes that Britain needs, so we can hire brilliant teachers for the next generation. Now, I'll hand over to the woman at the heart of Labour's mission for economic stability, a trailblazer for women in leadership everywhere, Rachel Reeves.
Come on, let us know.
Thank you, Angela. With Keir's leadership, we have changed the Labour Party so that we might have the chance to change our country. A little over a year ago, we set out our central economic mission to achieve the highest sustained growth in the G7 with good jobs and productivity in all parts of the country. That's not just about lines on a graph. It's about money in the pockets of working people, thriving high streets, and the revenues to rebuild our public services. I have huge ambition for Britain. I know you do too. And I see that potential wherever I go. But after 14 years of Conservative government, Britain is worse off. Growth weak, wages flat, taxes up, the cost of living up. That is the price of Conservative chaos. 5 prime ministers, 7 chancellors, and then the mini budget, which sent mortgage bills spiralling and put pensions in peril. And now Rishi Sunak is pushing ahead with another unfunded tax plan, a £46 billion commitment to get rid of national insurance altogether, a plan that the Conservatives have no idea of how they will pay for it. I will never play fast and loose with the public finances, because I know that when you do so, you play fast and loose with family finances. And that means that business uncertainty increases too. Before entering politics, I worked as an economist at the Bank of England. I know how much stability matters. So the first step in Labour's mission to restore growth is to deliver economic stability with tough spending rules so that we can grow our economy and keep taxes, inflation and mortgages as low as possible. After the last 14 years, stability is change. The stability that lets families plan for the future and allows businesses to plan ahead too. That will be the bedrock of everything that we do. But that alone is not enough. We need investment through a new partnership between government and business. And reform. Reform of employment rights with a new deal for working people. Reform of our politics with new powers for elected mayors, and reform of our planning system to get Britain building again. Bringing back stability, bringing back growth, it will require tough choices. It will take hard work, a decade of national renewal. But Labour is ready. Ready to serve, ready to lead, and ready to rebuild Britain. Thank you very much. And now it's my great pleasure to hand over to Rob from Thacombe Housing. Thank you very much.
I'm Rob Boughton, CEO of Thacombe, a house builder in the South East. I'm pleased to be here today to support the first step towards the growth mission. Recently, my company welcomed Rachel and Angela to one of our communities we have built. I was struck by how they understood the housing crisis and are committed to tackle it as part of the country's economic growth. I support Rachel's ambition to grow the economy, and I'm pleased to see Labour has put so much weight on economic stability, which is so crucial so businesses can plan ahead. They saw the new homes we are building, and they also saw the facilities and the infrastructure that needs to be put in place for people and communities to thrive. I know they want to see more quality, affordable, sustainable homes across the country. Net zero homes fit for the future being built today. I welcome that target. I welcome the forward planning. House builders and business more widely will be able to plan for the future if there is an industrial strategy and clear, consistent direction. A successful country needs a clear plan, which is why I'm encouraged to see Labour's first steps being set out today. I support Rachel's ambition to grow the economy and keep taxes and inflation as low as possible. Key to this is delivering new and sustainable homes paired with the infrastructure needed to allow those communities to thrive. I welcome Labour's plans to reform planning regulation to support house building and infrastructure fit for the needs of our growing population. At every stage of our life, schools for our children, green spaces for our families, local shops for our communities, and at appropriate homes for those looking to downsize but remain at the heart of their communities. Stability, certainty, economic growth and house building. It's a priority for Rachel, it's a priority for me and a mission we share. So thank you very much. We now have a video from another prominent business CEO to explain why he supports the first step.
Hi, my name's Seb James, and it is my great privilege to lead the Boots organisation. Boots has, as you know, around 2,000 stores and pharmacies right across the country, and just over 50,000 team members. Some of the things that I think are incredibly important to a business like Boots. For me, first and foremost, it's stability. A stable economy provides the right platform for sustainable economic growth. And it's that real focus on economic growth that is going to be so important in the next few years. The second thing is government and business really listening to each other, working together to grow our economy. And it's brilliant to see lots of that sharing going on. We need an industrial strategy that helps us plan for the long term, helps us to anticipate changing landscapes, emerging sectors, new skills, new technologies. Another thing that I think is incredibly important is employment, is having a government that works with business to help get people up and down the country in some of the most deprived areas of our great nation and into work and keep them in work. And that ranges from helping apprenticeship schemes properly work for business to reskilling mature workers. Now, I want to mention just one thing that's very close to my heart. Keir came to one of our Boots stores earlier in the year and we talked about the importance of looking after our high streets. There is a Boots on almost every high street, but high streets are not just a place that people come to shop. It's a place of work. In some small towns, the only place of work. It's a place to meet. It's a place to connect, to get health advice. It's the heart of our towns. A thriving high street helps to build communities, and I think that's going to be a really important game changer in the next few years. We need to invest in it, connect it to our digital world, and look after it. And then one last thing, the cost of living. Our customers tell us every single day that pressures remain. We, of course, welcome sensible fiscal measures to help put more money in people's pockets and grow the economy. And that's what I hope is going to happen.
Everyone in this room will owe a debt of gratitude to the NHS for a moment in their lives, whether it's the birth of a child, a parent who was cared for. And as a cancer survivor, I owe the NHS my life because it was there for me when I needed it. I was fortunate, but far too many people today are not so lucky. The Conservatives have driven our NHS into the ground over the past 14 years. Waiting lists have trebled. In an emergency, there's no guarantee an ambulance or even an A&E doctor will reach you in time. That basic promise that the NHS will be there for us when we need it has been broken. Some worry that the crisis in the NHS is terminal. Others, who never believed in it to start with, hope that's the case. Rishi Sunak has given up on the NHS, more interested in scapegoats than solutions. So it's clear the longer the Conservatives are in power, the longer patients will wait. So it will fall to us, the Labour Party, the party that created the NHS 75 years ago, to rescue and renew the service today. We know the NHS must be turned around for the millions of people who depend on it. And we know the NHS can be turned around because we've done it before. The last Labour government inherited an NHS on its knees. From 1997 to 2010, we transformed the health service, delivering the shortest waiting times and the highest patient satisfaction in history. We did it before and we will do it again. So today we announce the first step a Labour government will take to get our NHS back on its feet. We will cut NHS waiting times with 40,000 more appointments each week at evenings and weekends, paid for by cracking down on tax dodgers and non-dom loopholes. Healthcare for the many, paid for by the few. Investing more in the NHS and reforming the way the service works. The first step we will take to beating the Tory backlog and treating patients on time again. Patients like our next speaker, the most remarkable man I know, whose experience shows why patients across the country are crying out for change with Labour. Please give a warm welcome to Nathaniel Dye.
My name is Nathaniel Dye and I am dying of cancer. At first, I was told I'd have a rough year with treatment and surgery, then be free to live my life. When scans eventually happened, further spread was discovered and my prognosis worsened. It's all but certain that I'll be dead within 3 to 4 years. I was diagnosed 20 months ago and the clock keeps on ticking. I try not to think about what might have been if all the tests, scans and appointments had happened more quickly. But I know I waited over 100 days for treatment when the government's target is 62, and there's a good chance that time spent on waiting lists has cut my life in half. Quite literally, I've just passed my 2,000th week and most people will live beyond 4,000. There's a lot being said at the moment about sick notes. Let's put emotions aside for a second and talk purely in socio-economic terms. If my cancer had been caught early, I'd be looking at another 30 years of economic productivity. Instead, I'm staring down the barrel of early retirement and early death. I can't bring myself to be angry that it took so long to receive treatment. Those working in the NHS are doing their utmost to keep their heads above water and provide the care that is keeping me alive that bit longer. How could I resent that? But it's clear, even to me, that they are struggling to maintain a system at breaking point. When I received my terminal diagnosis, something deep inside me died that day. Hope. No, there isn't any hope for me, beyond maybe enjoying another healthy summer or two. But that doesn't mean I've given up on hope entirely. My hope is for everyone else, that people can avoid ending up like me. How? I hope to see a Labour government elected, a Labour government that I know will cut waiting times by providing more scans and appointments more quickly. Wes Streeting has been through cancer treatment on the NHS. He knows what needs to be done. And I trust Keir Starmer to effect the positive change that's so desperately needed, to act on the principle that we all deserve the best possible care from an NHS that is publicly funded, free at the point of use, and most importantly, works in time to save lives. I live in hope.
My name is Mike Tapp. I'm Labour's candidate for Dover, Deal and the Villages. I come from a background of service with the Army, where I served in Afghanistan and Iraq, and at the National Crime Agency and then the Ministry of Defence, where I spent much of my time in counter-terrorism, playing my part to help keep our country safe. The country needs a leader who understands results and how to deliver. This is what our leader, Keir Starmer, offers. Keir himself has experience smashing terrorist cells as the nation's chief prosecutor. And last week, Keir and Yvette introduced serious policy with a new elite border security command. Now, that will include the National Crime Agency, the police, the border force, and also the finest security services in the world, MI5. And they will have new counter-terror powers to better monitor, track and disrupt criminal gang activity. We all want to see an end to dangerous small boat crossings that undermine our border security and put lives at risk. And this is the first step in Labour's plan. After 9/11... the similar Office for Security and Counterterrorism helped stop countless terrorist attacks in the UK. And we will do the same with the new Border Security Command, giving us stronger borders under Labour. And I'm delighted that you'll now hear from people who are also backing Labour's plan. Thank you.
I'm Neil Basu, and I led in counter-terrorism policing for over 6 years. Over the past 6 years, I've watched events in the English Channel with a mixture of despair and fury as tens of thousands of men, women and children continue to make the perilous crossing from northern France. Like all organised criminals, the gangs plying this trade are motivated only by money. They don't care when people die, like 7-year-old Sarah Alashimi. More lives will be lost unless there's decisive action to dismantle the gangs and disrupt their evil operations. There's no evidence that the Rwanda scheme will stop the gangs and deter migrants from getting in their boats. So I'm heartened to see Keir Starmer's plans for a new border security command, a practical policy proposal to turbocharge the work of the multiple agencies dealing with this wicked issue. This policy gets serious about breaking the global business model of evil criminal gangs profiting from human misery. Now, I don't underestimate the challenge of bringing those resources into alignment and increasing the number of investigators, but it's necessary and strong leadership can achieve it. This won't be easy work. During a long policing career tackling organised crime and terrorism, I learned how criminal gangs switched tactics, adapted their methods, and preyed on weaknesses to stay one step ahead. But with extra resources, a firmer grip from the centre, and tougher powers, the new Border Security Command can make a huge difference.
Hello, I'm Cathy Henline, Director of Organised Crime and Policing Studies at RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute. Much of the work I lead focuses on serious and organised crime and the threats this poses to the UK, including to our border security. The organised crime threat to the UK is growing, and a significant proportion of this threat is posed by criminals based overseas. The ability to navigate our borders is key to their operations. there is much more we can do to tackle those working to move people and commodities in and out of the UK illegally. Our work indicates that the current response is too fragmented. Instead, we need a holistic, cross-cutting, whole-system response, one that's equal to the agility and innovation we see in criminal efforts to penetrate the border. The right powers and stronger resourcing are needed under the leadership of a dedicated individual and informed by a much deeper, more detailed understanding of the nature of this fast-moving threat.
Every family and business in Britain is paying the price of 14 years of Tory failure in rocketing energy bills. Whatever this government says, the cost of living crisis has not gone away. And Britain has been harder hit than other countries because under the Tories we are so dependent on fossil fuel markets controlled by dictators like Putin. So when the Tories block clean energy, they raise bills and make us less secure. The Conservatives left us exposed. And if they get back in, they would do so again. And once again, it would be working families that pay the price. Labour says it's time for change in Britain. Our mission is simple, to make Britain energy independent with the biggest investment in homegrown clean energy in British history as part of our plan for clean power by 2030. Because clean energy we control at home is cheaper than fossil fuels and more secure because dictators can't control it. So our first step is to set up Great British Energy, a publicly owned clean energy company by and for our citizens. And it will be funded by asking those big oil and gas companies to pay their fair share through a proper windfall tax so we can invest in the future of Britain. Great British Energy will reap the benefits of Britain's abundant natural resources with clean power projects in communities across our country to cut bills and create the next generation of good jobs, re-industrialising Britain. This is how we take back control of our destiny. This is how we cut bills for good and end the cost of living crisis. And friends, this is how we meet our obligations to future generations. I'm in politics because I know how much this fight matters and that we can win it. This is the most consequential energy and climate election in our history. The choice is clear. Higher bills and energy insecurity with the Tories, or lower bills and energy independence with Labour.
We opened our cafe in June 2020, and at the time our combined gas and electric bill was around £350 in the summer and around £500 in winter. This has now skyrocketed to £500 in summer and around £720 in the winter.
I've just had a baby, which is wonderful, but some of that has been really stressful because we were used to having two incomes, and so we're having to draw on our savings just to pay the bills each month.
I've lived here all my life in this house and I have never struggled so much to keep this house warm. The energy prices go up that much, it's ridiculous. I'm on my own, I got my pension coming in, and I just can't manage. I've just been eating this one room. I've been sleeping in the recliner chair. I can't afford to eat anywhere else.
Fairly recently, I got a job that was a higher pay grade because of the cost of living. It hasn't made any difference. In fact, I'm actually worse off now than when I was being paid less. I feel like it's a shame, and I feel quite upset and angry that I'm not able to provide for my growing family.
Hospitality is a difficult sector at the best of times, as we're at the mercy of many cost increases. But how can such an cost increase be shouldered by our customers, who are also feeling the pinch? This is why I'm supporting Labour's pledge to switch on GB Energy for locally sourced greener energy that will bring costs down. It will reduce our exposure to expensive energy purchased abroad, making us more energy independent.
I'm supporting Labour because they'll give us cheaper energy, greener energy and better energy, and they'll look after the vulnerable, the elderly and the disabled people.
No one comes and nothing is done. That is the refrain we hear far too often across the country talking to local residents about crime, policing and the criminal justice system. After 14 years of Conservative government, 90% of crimes go unsolved. There are 10,000 fewer neighbourhood police and PCSOs on the beat. More criminals are let off. More victims are let down. Serious violence, such as knife crime, has shot up. And community confidence in policing and in the rule of law has plummeted. That is the abysmal Tory record on law and order. And in the Labour Party, we know that security is the bedrock on which all other opportunities are built. And that is why the first step in our crime mission is about making our communities feel safe and secure again, cracking down on the crimes which erode the very fabric of our society. So we will start by putting 13,000 more neighbourhood officers and PCSOs back on the beat, right at the very heart of our communities. So someone comes and something is done. That is the security our communities need. And we'll pay for it by calling time on the wasteful police contracts and bureaucracy. We'll crack down on the antisocial behaviour blighting our town centres with new respect orders, zero tolerance zone, payback penalties and action on shoplifting so communities can take back their streets from organised crime. And we'll tackle the serious violence that leaves too many parents worried sick, too many people concerned about walking home at night. We'll set up a new Young Futures programme, including 100 new youth hubs, new youth mentors to stop young people being drawn into crime and to give young people their future back. And there will be stronger laws and action to tackle violence against women and girls, part of an unprecedented mission for every one of us to halve serious violence within a decade. But everything starts with that first step, getting more police back on the beat, restoring local confidence, because Labour will be a government of law and order, putting the safety of our communities right at its very heart.
This is why I believe in Labour's crackdown on antisocial behaviour by increasing neighbourhood policing. Hi, my name's Danny, and I've had a problem with antisocial behaviour in my area for quite some time. During the middle of the night, I've had the exhaust stolen from my car. I've had a man come to the front of my door, wave a stick, and I presume they were trying to get hold of the signal to my keyless fob so that they could gain entry to my car and take it away. I've seen a number of people sit in the car outside of my house and looking at my house and my neighbours around me, and also driving up and down the road quite slowly, looking at the houses too. I've also seen cars go to the rear of my property and sit there for extended periods of time. I've called the police, and they've just asked that I remain vigilant, and if anything serious was to happen, to call the emergency response team at 999. This has left me feeling really worried and anxious, and as a result, I often don't sleep until the early hours of the morning, just to ensure the safety of my family and my house.
And last, but very much not least, I have the privilege of leading Labour's mission to break down barriers to opportunity. The mission that most clearly embodies the values that we all share. Because today, the belief that good governments don't just run the country well, but change it for the better, is definitively Labour. And after 14 years of Tory failure, nowhere is the contrast between our parties clearer, nor the need for change more stark than in our schools. Under the Conservatives, our young people, their futures neglected. Parents see it, employers see it, and above all, our children see it. Schools that are literally crumbling around the next generation, where one in five children are regularly not in class, and where thousands of lessons every week are being taught by teachers not expert in their subject. Nothing matters more to driving up standards, to getting the best education for every child, than the quality of teaching. Teaching is at the core of education, an education of opportunity. So while teacher recruitment targets are missed year on year, vacancies reach record highs and staff leave in their droves, our children's life chances suffer, and so does our country. And it will be up to Labour to turn the tide after the Conservatives have failed a generation. Because the future Labour wants to build, the future our young people will shape together, begins with qualified, supported, expert teachers in every classroom. That's why we'll recruit 6,500 more teachers in key subjects to set up all of our children to succeed. Qualified because our children deserve to be taught by people trained for the job, and in every classroom because all of our children deserve what has been the privilege of too few. And we'll pay for it by ending tax breaks for private schools, and we'll invest that money in a better start for all of our young people. Great teachers transformed my life. And as Education Secretary in the next Labour government, I am determined to bring that change for all of our children. And I'm delighted to introduce Tito, who's going to talk about the difference teachers made to her life and the difference Labour wants to make to every life. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tito, and I'm currently studying at the London School of Economics and Political Science. I'm passionate about education, learning, and every child being able to achieve their dreams. One day, I want to be a part of a Labour government that provides opportunities for all, regardless of their class, their race, or their gender. Teachers are the backbone of our society. I'll always remember my form tutor and English teacher back in year 10 at Queen Elizabeth Girls' School in Barnet, Miss Kenny Dwyer. Miss Kenny Dwyer gave each and every student her complete attention, treating each student as uniquely gifted and worthy of achieving their dreams. She would start form time by asking each of us to think of something that we were looking forward to throughout the term. And in the face of impending GCSEs and the highs and lows of just being a teenage girl, we were able to start each day believing that our school experience was to be a positive one. Miss Kenny Dwyer asked each of us to share our career dreams. No matter how impossible they seemed, from astronauts to prime ministers, she told us that each of us could do it. She ended each form time by playing a song which has still stuck with me to this day, called Something Inside So Strong by Labi Siffre. And my favourite verse reads, "Brothers and sisters, when they insist that we're just not good enough, well, we know better. Just look him in the eyes and say, we're going to do it anyway." Teachers like Miss Kenny Dwyer are our children's first steps in the ladder of inspiration and aspiration. The Labour Party's policy to recruit 6,500 new teachers in key subjects means that more children will be able to feel as empowered as I was in their classrooms. All parents will be able to breathe a sigh of relief, knowing our party is embarking on preparing children for a life of work and the future through education and equal opportunities. And I would not be here if it was not for those Year 10 form times. And even as I stand here in the midst of an incredibly challenging master's degree exam season, each day I'm drawing on the words of Miss Kenny Dwyer for my motivation. I'm hopeful that the Labour Party will transform our nation's schools so that all children will have access to opportunities and feel empowered to take hold of them.
Good morning. My name is Haruna Hamza. I'm a security manager in London. I live here in Thurrock, just 5 minutes away from here. And I love living here. My wife works as a teacher in a local school, and my two children go to school minutes away from my house. Over the last 10 years, I've noticed things are getting worse. GP appointments harder to get, community services disappearing, less police presence. At the same time, it's going up. Energy bills skyrocketing. To book dentist appointments for my daughter was a nightmare. I'm fed up. And other people in Thurrock are fed up. That's why we voted Labour at the local elections. And the council, Labour. I have always voted Conservative previously, but I won't be doing that again. They let the country down. They let the country down badly. I'm excited to vote Labour at the general election. The Labour Party gives me hope. Keir Starmer is a good man. He's honest and he is a man of action. He will lead the government that will deliver for ordinary people across this country. And that is why I'll be voting Labour and why I'm excited to introduce today. Please welcome Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Now, I don't know about you, but I found those stories, whether on the videos or here in person, incredibly powerful, incredibly moving. Each of them stories about change. And Nathaniel, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you're able to hold yourself together with that poise and that dignity and to cling on to that hope for other people. It is inspirational for all of us. It's really fantastic. Thank you for coming. And what Nathaniel didn't tell you is that just a few weeks ago, he ran the marathon playing a trombone. He is a music teacher. And Rob, thank you for your story, your contribution about housing and the importance of a home, that basic security, the base camp from which people can build their lives. It makes such a difference. It certainly did for me. And Haruna, yours is a story about change. To change from one political party to another political party is a very big thing to do. It's about change. Now, we have changed the Labour Party to put it back in the service of working people. And what we seek, humbly, is the opportunity to change our country and put it back in the service of working people. And I'm not going to give you gimmicks. There's no quick fix to the mess that the Tories have made of this country. But this is a Change Labour Party with a plan to take us forward. And I have ambition for this country. And like all ambition, that starts with first steps. First steps towards higher growth, an NHS back on its feet, secure borders, cheaper bills, safer streets and opportunities for your children. Because we have all had enough, the whole country's had enough of 14 years of failure, spinning round and round and round, going in circles. Chaos and division. Feeding chaos and division. And that has a cost. A human cost. Will is a fireman. He lives in Milton Keynes. And I had a coffee with him not so long ago. He has a dream, an aspiration, if you like. It's not unusual. It's not unreasonable. He wants to own his own house. His own roof over his head. So he's not just a fireman. He's got two additional jobs, but he still can't afford it because of the damage that's been done under this government. He's at his wit's end. He said to me, what else can I do? I can't afford it because of what the government has done. He is paying the price. And he's not the only one. Alderhay Hospital is a children's hospital in Liverpool. It is brilliant. Some of you will perhaps have been there, will have heard about it. It's fantastic. Now, I went to that hospital. It's designed by children, by the way they've set out the wards. It's fantastic. The ward I went on to was the ward where they do heart operations for 0 to 2-year-old children. This is incredible. Just to go into that ward and to see tiny children, babies, having heart operations. Incredible courage, these tiny beings. A brilliant NHS team working with them, absolutely brilliant team, doing operations that you and I wouldn't think were possible. Now, I found that really humbling. I found it uplifting, affirming even. A real reminder of what we can do at our best. But I came away from that hospital also feeling really angry when I found out that the biggest cause of children going into that hospital for operations between the ages of 6 and 10 is to have their rotten teeth taken out. Literally, more children going to that hospital for operations have their teeth taken out because they're decaying than any other operation. They are paying a very heavy price for what this government has done. And that NHS team, that brilliant team, having to spend their time, their expertise, taking rotten teeth out. Something that could have been prevented. There are so many other examples. We've heard them this morning, but they're across the country. And they tell a bigger story, a deeper story. A story about a loss of trust, of hope, of confidence even, in our ability to take our country forward. And if we're serious about rebuilding our country and taking our country forward, we have to rebuild that hope, that trust, and that confidence. And you cannot do that with gimmicks, with short-term decisions, sticking plasters that just are put on the problem, but they don't fix the problem. It only gets bigger. And that is why, during the course of last year, I set out my missions for an incoming Labour government. The big change that we need to make to our country, to take it forward, to improve it, to make it a better place. Long-term ambitions, credible plans, fixing the fundamentals, and giving an incoming government a driving sense of purpose about the change that we want to bring about. Now, this is going to be hard. Sticking plasters is easy. It just doesn't work. But I've never shied away from tough decisions. I ran a public service. We changed it. We reformed it. Lots of people said you couldn't do it, you shouldn't do it. But we had to press on. We've changed the Labour Party and put it back in the service of working people. Country first, party second. Thank you. Now, today is an important day because all ambitions, particularly our ambition to change your country for the better, have to start with first steps. And these are our first steps. They enable us, if you like, to look the public in the eye and say, this is our down payment on change. These are the first shoots of the change that you deserve to see. First steps that are ready to go, fully costed and fully funded. Step one, economic stability. Now, this is the very foundation of economic growth. Tough spending rules, yes, to keep inflation, taxes and mortgages low. Because if you lose control of the economy, it's working people who will pay the price. Liz Truss lost control of the economy, and working people paid the price. Just about a week after her mini budget, I think it was a week, it may have been 5 or 6 days, I was in Wolverhampton with a young couple who had a 3-year-old child. And they wanted a second child to build their family. So they had identified a new home to buy. They got a mortgage, a provisional mortgage for it, that they could afford. They were excited about the future they were going to build. Liz Truss crashed the economy. Their mortgage offer literally went through the roof. They couldn't afford it. They had to cancel their plans. No more new home. No more moving on. Stuck. But they also made a much more profound decision. They decided that they couldn't afford a second child. Now they're going to live with that decision for the rest of their lives. And I'm not prepared to allow an incoming Labour government ever to do that kind of damage to working people. And this isn't just about the past, because Rishi Sunak has not learnt the lessons. He says he's going to abolish national insurance. That is a £46 billion unfunded tax cut. £46 billion. And that's why I can hardly believe I'm saying this. Stability is change. And that's why it has to be our first step. The second step is cutting NHS waiting times. It is impossible to overstate the seriousness of this problem. Nearly 8 million operations and appointments are needed. 8 million. That means everyone in this room, everybody watching or listening, probably is on a waiting list or knows someone who's on a waiting list. That's the worst it's ever been. And we see it the whole time. I see it every time I'm out. On Sunday, I was travelling from London to Manchester. And I confess, I was on my way to watch Arsenal beat Man United away at Old Trafford. Can you believe it, Rachel? But we pulled into Knutsford service station, and I got out, walked in to get a coffee. And a woman recognised me, and she called me over. And she said to me, and she showed me, she's got an ingrowing eyelid. It's red raw, swollen, and causing her a huge amount of pain and discomfort. And she said to me, I've been waiting 18 months for an appointment for the operation, and I've just been told I've got to wait another 12 months. She virtually pleaded with me to win the election to do something about it. That's not unusual. There are so many versions of this story, whether it's knees or hips, whatever the operation may be. That is the price that so many people are paying. And that's why we have to deal with it. 40,000 operations and appointments every single week, paid for by cracking down on tax avoiders and the non-dom tax status. Step three, a new border security command. Because the government has lost control of our borders. This year alone, 8,000 people have made that perilous journey across the Channel in a small boat. 8,000. That is a record. And let's be clear, nobody should be making that journey. Nobody. And it is a test. It's a test of governments and would-be governments as to how we respond. And there are choices in that response. You can choose a gimmick that won't fix it, or a serious plan that will get to the heart of it. And the government has chosen a gimmick. The Rwanda scheme cost a fortune, an absolute fortune, to deport less than 1% of those arriving by small boat. And that means, of course, that 99%+ will not be removed under the scheme. And if you don't think the criminal gangs are saying that to the people they're exploiting, then you've never met a criminal gang. Because those gangs are vile. They're making huge amounts of money. They're putting some of the most vulnerable people in the world in boats they shouldn't be in and breaching our borders. So we have to be serious about smashing those gangs and taking them down. That's where the Border Security Command comes in. A new command with new resources and new powers, including counter-terrorism powers. Now, we talk about small boats. That's the language that's used. But if you actually look at the boats that are being used these days, they're not that small. They're being made to order. They're being stored in Europe. They're being moved up to the north coast of France. And then vulnerable people are being put in them for money by vile gangs. Now, I worked for 5 years as the chief prosecutor, as the director of public prosecutions. And I worked with police and law enforcement across Europe to take down criminal gangs that were terrorist gangs. These are sophisticated gangs, by the way. But we did it and we took them down. I will never accept that it is impossible to take down the vile gangs that bring people in small boats to cross the Channel, and we will smash it. Step four, great British energy. Now, the problem here is obvious. It's the classic example, the textbook example of sticking plaster politics. Because just about 10 years ago, the Tories under this government said, cut the green crap. Remember that? Cut the green crap. And so they cut investment in clean British power. They cut investment. They banned onshore wind. They scrapped home insulation. And that left us really badly exposed. So when world events changed and Russia invaded Ukraine, we were more exposed than other countries, and your bills went up more than they should have done. I'm not prepared to let that happen under a Labour government. So we will set up great British energy, harness clean British power, owned by the taxpayer, making money for the taxpayer, investing in the future and keeping bills down for good. Step five, cracking down on antisocial behaviour. Now, all my working life, when I was chief prosecutor and since I've been a politician, people say to me, Keir, this is low-level antisocial behaviour. It's not that important. Completely wrong. If you feel that you can't open your door, your front door at night and go out, if you feel you can't walk down your own high street, be comfortable and safe in your own community, that is massive. That is a big inhibitor of so many people. It's not low-level. It's really important. And that was brought home to me in Stoke when I was at the sixth form college. I was talking to 16 and 17-year-olds. These were girls and young women. We were actually talking about something else. And they brought up antisocial behaviour. And they said to me, we do not feel safe walking down our own high street in broad daylight. That is massive for those young women. They don't feel safe on their own high street in daylight because of antisocial behaviour. That's what losing control of your streets feels like. So we've got to crack down on antisocial behaviour. 13,000 new neighbourhood officers in your community with new powers keeping your streets safe. And finally, step six, 6,500 extra teachers, paid for by removing tax breaks for private schools. Because we have to prepare our children and young people for the work they're actually going to do and the lives they're actually going to live. And that will require reform to make sure the skills they get, they're taught, are the skills they're actually going to need in life. It also means we need to concentrate on creativity, on confidence, what a difference that makes, and resilience that all children and young people need. But we need to get the basics right. Now, the Prime Minister is very fond of lecturing us that we need maths to age 18. And given what he's saying about the £46 billion tax cut that's unfunded, he's probably right about himself. But the serious point is this, we haven't got enough maths teachers in our secondary schools for those up to age 16. We haven't got enough maths teachers and other key teachers. That's shocking. Now, I was the first in my family to go to university. I know the power that education can give us. Somerstown is an area in my constituency. Some of you may know it, probably most of you don't. It's between Euston Station and King's Cross. It's one of the most deprived areas in the country, probably in Europe. And the children in the schools in Somerstown can look out of their school windows, out of the playgrounds, across to the back of King's Cross development, huge corporations in there. Google is in there, and fantastic facilities being put up for Google. The Guardian building is just there. They can see it, but they can never imagine that that's where they will work. That is a few hundred yards, but they can't make that leap. And I want every child, whatever their background, to think that success belongs to them, that they don't have to change who they are to get on. And this Labour Party will fight every day, to give those children a future which is fit for them. Thank you. So here we are. One card, six steps, in your hand, a plan to change the country. This is a message that we can take to every doorstep across the country. Every doorstep across the country. And make that argument. Decline is not inevitable. Politics can make a difference. Britain will have a better future. And you can choose it with Labour. Stop the chaos with Labour. Turn the page with Labour. Return politics to service with Labour. And with patience, with determination, with these first steps, we can rebuild our country with Labour. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're now going to take some questions from the media. So I'll just get a note. I think we're starting with Chris from the BBC. Chris.
Thank you. Chris Mason, BBC News. You've talked about being held accountable. Let's talk about one deliverable that you've talked about this morning and by when you will deliver it. So you talk about an extra 40,000 appointments in the NHS each week. How many weeks into a Labour government do you get to that number?
Well, Chris, we will get to it just as quickly as we can, as swiftly as we can. The ambition is there. We've obviously, Chris, to make that happen, we've got to operate weekends and evenings. We have to pay staff for the shifts. That is why we've already had the discussions and starting discussions with the staff about how that will work. Because I don't want to waste any time in the first, say, 100 days of a Labour government on discussions that I could be having now. So our ambition is to get that up as quickly as possible. I'm not going to put a number on it, but what I am going to do, as with all of the missions, is make sure that we're doing the work now to make sure we can hit the ground running as soon as the election is called. But those 40,000 operations will make a huge difference. I mean, imagine if you're on that waiting list and you're one of the 40,000 each and every week. What a difference it will make to you. What about the woman in Knutsford who needs her eye looked at? That's the difference that these first steps can make. Thank you very much. Beth, can I come to you?
Thank you. Keir Starmer, you set out your five missions in January 2023. Voters have been waiting for quite a long time for flesh on the bones, but you've downsized your promises today. You promised the highest sustained economic growth in the G7. That becomes economic stability. You promised clean energy by 2030. That becomes setting up Great British Energy. Why are you scaling back your ambition? Is it for fear of breaking promises, or is it because you're so far ahead in the polls, you're lowering the bar? Thank you.
I'm not. I'm not scaling back our ambition absolutely at all. And it's very important, Beth, and thank you for raising this, because that is the way I've set this out has been a strategy I've been operating to for 4 years now, which is a strategy which was first to recognise the scale of the defeat of the Labour Party at the last general election, the worst defeat since 1935. And so stage one was change the Labour Party. Change it, turn it inside out, facing the country and serving working people. Next stage, expose the government as incompetent, ably assisted by several of their prime ministers. The next stage, which you and others pushed me to, is right, well, now it's clear that you've changed the Labour Party and it's clear to everyone this government's failing. What are your big ideas for the country? That's the missions that we set out last year. This is not to reduce the missions. Is to say, what's the first down payment on the delivery of those missions? What are the first steps that we can take? They're not the only steps, they're the first steps. The missions remain, but this is, if you like, the tangible steps that we will take to deliver on those missions. And that's why I said we'll look the public in the eye and say, these are the down payments, the first shoots. So we're not reducing the missions. We're putting flesh on the bones by saying, these are the first steps we'll take in order to deliver the missions. But the missions, each and every single one of them are there as the long-term ambitions, goals, targets, the driving purpose of the incoming Labour government. So the down payment in relation to the NHS, 40,000, that's to deal with the waiting list, but we've still got to change the NHS and make it fit for the future. GB Energy is the first step towards clean power in 2030, and one that can be done very quickly. So this is absolutely consistent with this strategy I've been operating to for 4 years. And I appreciate... So, Beth, that's the way this fits into the missions we want to deliver in government. Thank you, Beth, very much. Robert.
Robert Peston, ITV. I'm sure absolutely everybody was moved by what we heard from Nathaniel Dyer and his call for hope. And I think that is the rub. We haven't seen any rise in living standards, or negligible rises in living standards, for 16 years. Your colleague, Gordon Brown, points out that children living in poverty are still at absolutely record levels. We've got the most dangerous world that any of us have lived in, probably since the Second World War. We've got an AI industrial revolution, which may make us richer or poorer, depending on how it's managed. So what would you say to those who say that what you call your first steps simply aren't ambitious enough?
Well, Robert, two things about that. Firstly, in relation to your first point about hope, because I do think it's a really serious challenge in politics, because it's not just the failure of the last 14 years under this government. It's that I think they have beaten the hope out of people. They've beaten the hope out of people that politics can be a force for good, and that change and hope is possible. And that is why we have to rebuild that trust and that confidence and put serious long-term proposals on the table and point out the first steps we're going to take, because this is going to take time, rebuilding that hope and that trust. This is a very different moment to 1997, after the damage that's been done in the last 14 years. And in relation to the first steps, they're first steps towards the missions, which are huge change. Imagine an NHS not just back on its feet, but fit for the future. Imagine clean power by 2030. These are big changes to our country, an economy that works for everyone in all parts of the country. This is big, bold change, but it needs first steps. I don't accept that they're small first steps. If you're waiting on a waiting list, this is a change that makes a difference. It matters. It makes a massive difference to you. If you can't pay your bills, if you can't buy a house, these are huge changes. That's a friendly little thing. that really matter. So, I mean, I would go... And the way I look at it, Robert, is people say, well, what drives your politics? And the answer is all the people I spoke about, the people I have in my mind's eye when I make decisions. So when I think about this 40,000 appointments for the NHS, I'm thinking about the woman in Knutsford. I mean, she was pleading with me not to have to wait another 12 months for her operation. And that's just a simple example of what everybody is experiencing. So, Robert, that's how this fits in. That's the hope. And that's why these first steps are so important. Andy, from Channel 5.
Thank you. Andy Bell, 5 News. Keir Starmer, a lot of people thought they knew what they were getting when they made you leader of the Labour Party. But pretty quickly, you junked a lot of what you said you'd do then. Why should people have any faith that you'll stick to what you say you'll do now?
Well, what I said to every member of the Labour Party when I was seeking election to lead the Labour Party was that I will change the Labour Party so that we can win an election. We had lots of hustings. We had various candidates. It started off with quite a big cast, went down in the end to a smaller cast. And each of us said, this is the things that we will do. I ended every hustings with the same argument, which is, if we don't win an election, none of this that any of us have said is going to make any difference at all to anybody's life. So what I said was, I will put us in a position to win the general election. And I've been working hard at that for 4 and a bit years. And that is what Labour Party members and supporters want more than anything else. It's why they're in the Labour Party. And that has been the constant work that I've done ever since. And I've explained and talked this through in terms of the stages I thought we had to go through as a party, which was we had to change. You can't lose an election that badly and say to the electorate, what were you doing? You have to look at yourself and say, we need to change. You have to expose the government as not fit to govern. But then you have to put your ideas on the table for the change that you'll bring about for the country. And we have to do that according to the circumstances in 2024. The challenges we face now are pretty big and obvious. Robert was spelling out some of them, but there's a long, long list. And that is why we now need to set out in credible, believable terms the change that we want to bring about for the country with a serious plan behind it. And today, the first steps, what are the first things you'll do to start bringing that about? Thank you so much. Natasha. Natasha.
Hi, Natasha from LBC. So Keir, three of these five pledges are very similar, sorry, six pledges, are very similar to the Tories' five pledges. What do you say to that on the NHS, the economy and on migration? Are you really offering the change that people want to see? And why are you so afraid to be so bold when you're so far ahead in the polls? And if I may, this is a Tony Blair-style pledge card, isn't it? Do you feel like Tony Blair today?
Well, that's three questions. That's three questions wrapped up in one. But let me reject the idea that this is similar to what... The government says they're going to stop the boats. More people have come by boat this year, 8,000, than any other year. That is a record failure. A record failure because they're going for a gimmick, not a serious plan. The government says they're going to get the waiting list down. They're going up. Everybody knows. We talk about the numbers. Nearly 8 million appointments and operations needed. That's massive. That's never happened in the history of our country since we've had the NHS. We've never been in this position. This is fundamentally different to the government. But the difference is also political. Because I'm not prepared to do gimmicks. I'm only prepared to do the hard yards of serious change with a serious plan for 5 or 10 years of change in this country with the first steps that are needed to bring it about. And that is a political difference between us, a seriousness, if you like, about politics. The rhetorical flourishes are great. The massive promises are great. But if you don't deliver on them, you do the very thing that we've been talking about, which is beat the hope out of people. So we have to rebuild that. And that's what this is about. Thank you, Natasha. Lizzie from The Mirror.
Lizzie. Hi, Keir. Gordon Brown yesterday called for the two-child benefit limit to be scrapped and warned that the UK is heading for the worst child poverty figures in living memory. Where does ending child poverty sit in your list of priorities, and will you rethink your position on the two-child limit?
Ending child poverty is central. I mean, it was central to the last Labour government. We did a huge amount of work on it, and it'd be central to an incoming Labour government if we're privileged enough to come in to serve, and we will put a strategy in place for it. And, you know, child poverty cannot be divorced from education, from housing, from the cost of living, from bills down. They are all, in a way, feeding into the strategy to deal with poverty. What I can't do is make promises that I can't deliver on. And this is really important to the question about hope, because where we've had to say now, there are things we might want to do, but we can't because the economy is being damaged. I want to say that this side of the election. I do not want to be saying that the other side of the election. And that's tough. The easy thing is just to pretend we can deliver it all. Nice big wheelbarrow of things that we can deliver. But if we can't deliver it, I'm not going to say it. Because I think that's the stable foundation we need in politics and now for the economy. Thank you so much. Jack from The Sun.
Jack. Thank you, Keir. Jack from The Sun. Just on the specifics about the gender schools guidance that came out today, would you keep it? Would you scrap it? And specifically the bit about the ban on teaching of gender identity. Thank you.
Yeah, Jack, I think what's come out today, I think, is a draft for consultation. I've not actually looked at it in any great detail. So I will look at it, look at whether it's far removed from what's happening at the moment. And I think then once it's gone through consultation, there'll be another stage of the exercise. So I'll look at it at that point. Thank you, Jack. Craig from the Metro.
Craig. Well, Craig Munro from Metro. Now, the nature of priorities is you've got to leave some stuff out. But I was surprised going through the booklet that was handed out that there's no direct mention at all of the environment or climate. Was there any logic behind leaving out such an important issue?
Well, firstly, you're right to highlight the importance of climate. Obviously, what we're saying about Great British Energy is the first step towards clean power 2030. That's a massive contribution to our environmental obligations. It's also the only way to get down bills for good, to get energy security, and actually to harness the jobs of the future. So it is in there. This is the first step. It's not to take away from the missions, but the first step is to set up Great British Energy so we can harness that clean British power, which is hugely important. As Ed said a moment ago, renewable energy is cheaper than fossil fuel. It is also the right thing to do for the planet. So that comes under that heading. Thank you so much. Aubrey from The Times.
Good morning, Sir Keir. Aubrey Allegretti from The Times. I want to ask you about one of your pledges on migration. You've obviously focused on tackling the supply side of this issue in terms of the border control center that you're setting up. I want to ask you about the supply. So what are you doing to sort of tackle the problem more downstream? How are you going to disincentivize people from risking their lives to come here in the first place? Do you want to, for example, spend more on foreign aid to be able to try and convince people to stay in their own countries? And on legal migration as well, I was at your speech at the CBI about 16 months ago where you said you wanted to end the UK's dependency on migration, legal migration. What are your plans to do that if you get into government?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for both of those. Let me try and deal with both sides of that. Firstly, the biggest disincentive to people coming here is that they won't be able to get in boats across the channel and use all of their money given to vile gangs to do it. So if we smash those gangs, that is a massive deterrent. It is not possible to do it. Those gangs cannot operate in that way. That's a huge deterrent. The second deterrent is, if you do come here and you've got no right to be here, you'll be removed. And that's not happening at the moment. By the end of this year, we're going to have a number of 100,000 people who've got to this country unlawfully, who are not being processed. If they're not processed, they can't be returned. That's not a deterrent. That's not a deterrent. Under this government, they've completely lost control. Just as they've lost control of everything else. And on legal migration, what I was talking about at the CBI speech is that we're over-reliant for our skills coming from abroad because we don't have a skills strategy in this country. Lots of businesses say to me, I need the skills. If they're available near me, great. If they're not, I've got to get them from elsewhere. And one of the reasons they're not available near me is because we haven't got a proper skills strategy, which is why we set out a skills strategy. We have to crack that. It doesn't make any sense to go on and on and on without a skills strategy. Now, I've been in politics for 9 years. I started as the shadow immigration minister. Went around the country talking to businesses. And amongst the questions we discussed was, what's the biggest inhibitor of growth in your business? And they said to me, I can't get the skills I need. So this debate about the lack of skills has been going on a very, very long time. Like all debates under this government, goes round and round in circles and gets absolutely nowhere. I'm not prepared to carry on like that. This is about doing politics in a different way and not being prepared to do the sort of sticking plaster stuff that doesn't change the fundamentals. Thank you, Aubrey. Ben from The Telegraph.
Hi, Ben Riley-Smith from The Telegraph. Tony Blair had 5 pledges on his card. You have 6 today. Tony Blair had New Labour. You've got Change Labour. Tony Blair used to take his tie off at big events. I've spotted you don't have a tie on today.
Is there anything else you've spotted, Ben?
Well, what do you say to people about who claim that you're just a copycat Blair?
Well, look, the first thing I'd say about Tony Blair, which is more important than whether he took his tie off, is he won 3 elections in a row. And what Blair did in 97 is what Wilson did in 64 and Attlee did in 45, which was to take the Labour Party from opposition into power. We've only done it 3 times, effectively. And the thing that unites them was the ability to glimpse the future and to persuade people to go on that journey to a changed future. Obviously, different circumstances in 1945, as we all understand, 64, white heat, and then the challenges that were facing Tony Blair in 1997. In that way, the similarities, because I do think you've got to glimpse the future, you've got to understand the challenges, and you've got to have serious answers to the challenges that we face. But it's not copycat, because we're now, what, 27 years on from 1997. The challenges we face now are not the same as those faced by Tony Blair. They're different challenges. And therefore, I do understand there's this, ever since I've been leader of the Labour Party, everybody's been trying to sort of say, well, which leader are you most like? You know, who have you secretly got tattooed on the inside of your arm? And the answer is none of them. Because this team and I, all of our candidates and I, we have to face the future. We are trying to create the conditions for the fourth time in the history of the Labour Party that we've come from opposition into power. So yes, some of the things that are important about winning power are the same, of course they are. But I'm very conscious that we're facing the challenges that are now here in 2024 and have to provide answers to those challenges. Thank you, Ben. Kamal.
Kamal Jaffa, Daily Mail. So, Keir, you previously talked about winning over swing voters in seats like these. 2 weeks ago, however, parts of Labour's traditional voter base abandoned you for the Greens and the Independents over issues like Gaza. How do you propose to win them back in the lead-up to the election?
Well, thank you for that question, because it is really important that we win over voters who haven't voted for us before, which is why I'm so pleased to be introduced today. And I think, firstly, I'd say, if you look at those local elections, I think we showed that we can win anywhere. We had a really successful set of elections, if you look at them in the round. And that was the last time anyone will vote effectively before the general election. So it was a good set of results for us. But the challenge that you put to me is a really important one. And I think part of the answer to that is to be clear that the missions that we are setting out for the future of our country, I've said it's a decade of national renewal. That's a national project. So you don't have to be tribally Labour to want your family, your community, your country to improve. In fact, I think most reasonable people want that. And so I say that this is a project which is a project that I think most people, whether they voted Labour in the past, whether they might vote Labour now, or whether they've never voted Labour, could be part of this project. Because I genuinely think, it's at the heart of my politics, I genuinely think that most reasonable, tolerant people in this country, and that's the vast majority, do want to see their chances, their families' chances, their community chances. They want to see their country move forward. And I say, this Change Labour Party is a party for you. This project of national renewal is a project for you. Thank you so much. Arj.
Morning, Keir. Arj Singh from The Eye. I just wanted to follow up on Beth's question about ambition, and I wanted to ask you about your economic mission. You've sort of confirmed there that you still aim to get the fastest growth in the G7.
Yeah.
If you don't achieve that, will you have failed in your economic mission?
Well, we set that out with the aim of fulfilling it. It's tough. It's really tough. Some people say to me, the ambition, the missions are not ambitious enough. They're really, really tough. You know, the high sustained growth in the G7 is a really tough mission. Getting to clean power by 2030 is a really tough mission. Most people say, that's going to be hard. I'm not sure. And then we go through what we're thinking, how we'll work. And most people then say, I can see it's possible. And that's the mindset. It's possible, we can do this. And therefore, we will be measured against it. And I think we can turn this around. I think for economic growth, if we look at what the inhibitors are, the planning laws getting in the way, the fact the grid doesn't connect up quickly enough, the fact we can't do infrastructure, can't make decisions quickly enough. There are so many examples I could give you. The way we partner with business. I think we can do this. That's our mission. That's why we set it out as a mission. And you and others can then measure us against it. But for it to happen, we need the first steps, which is obviously what we're setting out today. Thank you. And then Alita from The Guardian.
Hi, Keir.
You can't quite see your building. You can if you look around the corner.
We'll have a look. Well, why did you decide to omit out housing and workers' rights from these steps? Does that mean you're not as committed to them And one more, if I may. Can the public expect to see these six steps materialised in their lives within two terms of a Labour government?
Yes, is the answer to the second question. And that is why we're doing so much thinking now about what we need to do to deliver on these missions, because we cannot be complacent about the election. Every vote has to be earned, and the challenge has just been put to me quite rightly. How do you persuade more people to come on board? We must be humble about that and earn every vote, but we won't be forgiven if we're not prepared on day one, if we are privileged enough to come in to serve. And that's why I'm confident we can deliver this over 5 or 10 years. A decade of national renewal is the way that I've set it out. On your question about housing and workers' rights, they're integral to this. The fact that we've got first steps does not mean that all other steps, all other parts of our programme are sort of put to one side. These are simply the steps that we can set out and say, these are the first things we can do, the six of them here. This is a discussion that we want to have on the doorsteps across the country. It doesn't take away from any other commitments that we've made, because all of these commitments taken together build up to the five missions. And the five missions are about changing our country for the future. And that's really important, because I'll just finish with this, because I feel it so strongly. And I say this, whichever political party anyone supports, I do understand people, you know, voting for other political parties, wanting other political parties in power. But if you take these 14 years to leave your country in a worse state after 14 years than you found it, is unforgivable in politics, whichever party you support. I fundamentally believe that. And I'm not prepared to see a Labour government that doesn't materially improve our country, so that we can genuinely look back in 5 or 10 years' time and say, do you know what? It is better now than it was. We've got more chances, opportunities, equality now than we had before. This country has moved forward, and I've moved forward, my family, my community has moved forward with it. And that's what this is all about. But for that, you need serious missions, you need first steps, you need a different mindset in politics. Thank you all so much. Thank you for being here. Nice to see you. Thank you. Thank you. Trouble.